Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Oh, I tell you, Jennifer, she is really a party pooper.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Jennifer poops at parties, so she poops at parties, so and people know this.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
I poop at parties. I poop at parties, but people don't know because I close the door.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Where does she go for it? Does she visit a water closet and make door of the open so people may see and smell things? This sound horrible.
The Fan. New York
streets will kill us. All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan. We got Brandon Huffman coming up at 1:30, national recruiting expert. All right, 1:15, we'll talk national pizza chains and a cautionary tale for one Andy Dirt Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Specifically for Andy Dirt Johnson.
Just for me, I got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You need to be careful of doing blank.
My head's on a swivel.
And I'll tell you what that is at 1:15. Western Conference Finals on last night.
It was on last night. It was a good game.
It was?
At least at the end, made you worry a little bit.
I mean, it started as a good game, and the Nuggets kind of took over. They played really well. Jokic dominated. Jamal Murray couldn't miss a shot. Jeremy Grant, Monte Morris were really big for the Nugs. They went up by as many as 20, which was the biggest deficit the Lakers had faced in the playoffs. And with about 8 to go, the Lakers made a run.
They did.
I couldn't believe it. I thought LeBron and company were going to pack it in, say it's not our night. They're playing really well. We played really poorly. But they made a run. They cut it within 2. And they had a couple chances there to tie or take the lead, and they just couldn't capitalize. The Nuggets pulled away. Jamal Murray hitting some big, big buckets to ice that game. And now it's 2-1, and it may be ridiculous to you, but I want to get your thoughts anyway. Do we have a series now?
Yeah, look, to the point of it being a good game, you're right. The majority of it was bad, but any chance you have to watch a team blow a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter, which they almost did last night because it was 77 early in the fourth, I want to say, and then you look up all of a sudden, it was like 101-98. Like, what the hell just happened? They're on a 20-4 run or 20-3-1, whatever it was. That made it very interesting, and thankfully Denver was able to recover. I want to say that, no, I'm not buying it's a series. But
you're
I,
not buying it. They've outplayed them in 2 of the 3 games.
I would have said the same thing against the Clippers. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Denver could beat the Clippers. So maybe me saying that it's not a series is exactly what Denver wants to hear, man. I'm really happy for them coming back and winning. And I think they showed you again that they're a resilient team. They've showed it this postseason. Hell, you even think back to last year, man. I remember when Portland and Denver were playing in the second round, and that game 3 went to, what, 4 overtimes, 5 overtimes, whatever it was.
4 overtimes.
Portland wins it. Rodney Hood, big buckets. And everybody said, there's no way Denver can recover from this. Like, there's no way you can survive the emotional toll of losing a game like that. And what did they do? They went out 1 game 4 and then blew Portland out in game 5. Now, I know the Blazers ended up winning that series, but they showed you that last year, that they were tough and they could overcome things. And maybe I should have given them more credit, because Game 2 was about as tough of a way as you could find to lose a game, man. They were in control, felt like they should have won. You had good games from your stars. Anthony Davis hits a walk-off three-pointer. That's a back-breaking loss, mm-hmm. And it feels like the series is over. And they came out and then survived a fourth-quarter scare, which I think at times for teams that are in this moment for the first time, in a conference finals, that is, it's pretty easy to let that thing overwhelm you. Like, here comes LeBron and AD, you can't get stops. Your 20-point lead has disappeared. Like, the pucker factor is so strong in that moment, yet their stars stepped up and hit big shots, and I'm happy they won game three.
Yeah, I thought there was a moment for, you know, late in that game for the people who turned it on just at the end to see. I thought there was a moment. It was like a 3-0 break. It was Rondo, Davis, Kuzma. Mm-hmm. They had just created a turnover, and Davis was in the middle. Kuzma was on Davis's right, and Rondo was leading it. He passes it to Davis, who had just stepped into the free throw line, and Davis instinctually just passed it right back. Rondo bobbled it. It went out of bounds.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look back on the play-by-play to see what the score would have been had they not missed that opportunity, but I actually thought that was pretty pivotal in terms of them being able to complete the comeback. They couldn't be stopped. They were bodying around, pushing and being physical with Denver, creating a bunch of turnovers. Rondo just, oh my God, he had like 3-4 straight rips from Jamal Murray and Jokic.
Yeah, it's playoff Rondo.
But instead of Davis just keeping the ball, going up as a 7-footer with a 7'3 wingspan and maybe getting an easy dunk or at least a finger roll or passing to Kuzma, who the defender didn't see, he goes right back to Rondo. And I kind of thought that summed up the night for the Lakers. Didn't feel like their energy was really there. Up 2-0, big shot we just hit. Everybody talking about the Lakers. And they just didn't bring that energy. But in that specific possession, I thought it summed it up. Davis had almost no rebounds till the very end of that game. I think he finished with 2 or 3. And if your best player just keeps it and dunks it, at that point, I think Denver starts to just kind of break. Like, damn, now it's... I think that would have tied the game, if I'm not mistaken, or cut it to 2. And you just could feel the momentum switch. The light turned on for the Lakers. They started to clamp down. But you turn it over like that. You give Denver kind of a sigh of relief. They hit one more shot, and then they get to a 6-7-point game. It gets hard to come back because the Lakers were exhausted from that comeback.
They were. I think it's another note, too, of why bubble basketball has been so fun to watch, because you don't have the aspect of the crowd in that moment. Like, imagine that's happening in Denver. You know the crowd's going to try and muster up some energy to get behind them, but you could hear a pin drop in that building. If you're having a 20-point lead, a race in the fourth quarter, like, the stress level, I'm sure, is so much higher in that moment. And so to not have that and just kind of go over to the sideline and be able to press the reset, I think it was Kerry Eggers who did an interview recently with Adam and Son, who was on, I believe, Denver staff. I know he's on one of the staffs that's still around. And he was asking him about what the bubble basketball has been like. And he said it's like the best, you know, 5-on-5 AAU tournament of all time. Mm-hmm. There's no outside distractions. David Adelman is his name. There's no outside distractions. It's just pure basketball. And I think you saw that again last night, to not be able to or to be able to withstand that run and then still come up with big buckets when they need them. I think game four is going to be the big tester for them. You have the Lakers' attention now that you've won a game. But Mike Malone, I thought, had a great postgame speech. I was watching the postgame on TNT, and they showed him. And he said, man, this is no different than where we were at against the Clippers. Against the Clippers, game one, they got blown out. Same against the Lakers. And then they blew game three after winning game two, and they were down 2-1. And he said, it's the same thing. You just flip it. We blew game two and then won game three. It's the same spot. We were down 2-1. They know that they can come back and win a series like that. So you got to have a lot of confidence in that locker room.
Yeah, the bubble basketball element. The other part I was thinking about last night, the Lakers looked gassed on that comeback attempt. LeBron is up there. Everybody's made note of that. You're 17. They're playing every other night. They're not getting 2-3 nights off here between LA and Denver. You're every other night now. And we'll see with what the verdict was in Louisville. We'll see if the NBA decides to play today. Remember the last time something like this happened in Wisconsin with the Jacob Blake thing, the Bucks didn't take the court and they went on strike for a day.
Yep.
We'll see if the NBA plays tonight with Boston and Miami. But if they do, and there's no holdup in the NBA, I do wonder if the Nuggets can take advantage of that and just the Lakers exhausting themselves to try to win that game late. Maybe their most important player, he might not be their best player anymore, but he's probably their most important, is in year 17 of his career. You got the Nuggets are this younger-ish team. They've got athletic guys all over. They create a lot of problems in matchups. I'm wondering if that effect is going to take place because of the bubble situation. Jamal Murray showed up in his postgame, by the way, in house slippers. He says, I live here now. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, come on. I don't need to dress up for anything.
And I don't blame him, but the every other night deal, I mean, these NBA players have been accustomed to 2-3 nights off in between games. And sans the Boston-Miami series, because it started sooner, now you've got every other night. And I just wonder if the slightly older team is going to end up maybe succumbing to that. Dwight, Rondo, David's been in the league for a minute now, year eight, nine for him. LeBron, year 17. You've got some older guys on that Laker group. Whereas with Denver, they're freewheeling, they're believing, and they have a little more energy.
Yeah, I think the longer the series goes, it can benefit a team like Denver because they're not playing with any pressure. And I thought that showed as the series went on against the Clippers when they won game five and then they won game six. You could tell the pressure was all on one sideline and not the other, and they were hitting the side of the backboard because of it, and Denver played loose and free, and they ended up blowing them out in game seven. I think that exists with the Lakers. Like, that's a team that's supposed to win an NBA championship. Denver's not necessarily supposed to be here, and you can be free and easy. The benefit they have, I know they're playing every other night, but the benefit they have is not having to travel. So in a normal situation, if you're taking a night or two off extra, you're also having to fly from Denver to Los Angeles back and forth as the series goes on. So they get that. The one guy I think that is stood out the most to me, by the way, Jokic might be my favorite player in the NBA to watch. That's a bit of a strong statement, like, ooh, outside of a Blazer. Take. I love watching Jokic play, man. The shots that he takes, the ones that he makes, like one-foot runners, fadeaways. Like, he's just a big dude that controls the tempo and pace of the game. Like, I love watching Jokic play. But the other guy that they needed to be better and was last night was who you mentioned, in Jamal Murray. Like, he had a couple of clunkers against the Clippers. Of course, had that big game seven for 40 points. It wasn't like he was bad in game two, 25, 6, and 4, but they needed a little more from him. He had 28, 12 assists, 8 rebounds, knocked down 50% of his threes. He took his game to another level last night. And if they want to win the series or make it a longer series, that's the Jamal Murray you need.
Yeah, Murray, it's not necessarily about making more shots. He only had 3 points more in game three than two. It's about timely shots.
Yes.
And he had a lot of those last night.
When they were going on that run and it was cut down to four, you were feeling it. And he seemingly, it felt like, I know I'll probably overreact, it felt like every time down to answer, he was hitting those big threes on the other end.
Absolutely. So a 2-1 series lead for the Lakers. We'll see if this can be a good series coming up here in game four. Boston, Miami. We've got that one coming tonight as Boston just clobbered Miami in the last matchup. All right, coming up next, it's kind of a mixed bag here. I've got advice for Dirt. We've got what's the best national pizza chain. And I've got quite a hilarious story from a former football player. And that it's fantastic. We'll get to a hodgepodge of things. Brandon Huffman, National Recruiting Director for 24/7 Sports, will join us at the bottom of the hour. That's next on Radio.com and 1080 The Fan. Bang, 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 bang. All right, Brandon Huffman of 24/7 Sports is going to join us coming up at the bottom of the hour. Everybody's doom and gloom about the Pac-12 not starting with the rest of the conferences. Well, part of that's got to be recruiting, right? If the future of conference hinges on talent and losing it. So I want to know if the Pac-12 has suffered any setbacks to their delay on their announcement for fall football. So Brandon Huffman will join us coming up. I want to start with Pat McAfee real quick.
Okay.
Former kicker for the Colts.
Yes, he's bounced around. He's had quite the career.
He has, yeah. And he's had quite the post career as well. Yes. He's become a media sensation. I think he does a show on YouTube.
He's got like his own thing. He was with Barstool for a while. And
then he
left.
Went to CBS Sports. And then he got out of that because I don't think he wanted to do that. He does his own thing, and he probably does pretty well.
I'd imagine. I remember he was on ESPN for a while last year, too. Remember, he's a part of their college football team. It was like him and Matt Hasselbeck randomly calling games.
Well, Bruce Feldman wrote a piece on him. Mm-hmm. Who the hell is Pat McAfee? Well, Pat McAfee is a pretty relatable dude. In fact, his backstory is hilarious. I guess he is one of the more interesting human beings a lot of these different people Bruce Feldman interviewed has ever met. His dad, he grew up in Pittsburgh. His dad was like a laborer. They didn't have the most money. He got a scholarship offer, McAfee did, to Kent State. A coach saw him, offered him a competition in Miami. And if you win, West Virginia was looking to give you a full ride scholarship. It was $1,500. He asked his dad for the money. His dad said, "You already got a scholarship. I'm not giving you $1,500 to get a different scholarship."
Yeah.
So he borrowed money from one of his friend's dads and heard about a game in the basement of an Italian restaurant in Pittsburgh, showed up, all grown men. Mm-hmm. He won the first pot. It was $1,700. he couldn't walk away at that point.
Yeah.
So he basically just bet little bets just to kill time before they allowed him to back out. He came back home, told his dad. His dad gave him like a couple $100 to cover the rest of the cost. He walked away with $1,300. When he showed up to West Virginia, he said he'd never practiced with football players, so he wanted to impress the guys. Player walked in, saw him kicking. He goes, "Hey, watch this." He booted a 65-yard field goal, nailed it, and the guy, the teammate of his, went, wow, I guess he's the real deal.
It's drilled a field goal.
Coaches rave about his attitude. I guess he's just the more likable guys. When he was at West Virginia, Rich Rod said he's probably the most talented and enjoyable special teams kid he's ever been around.
Yeah.
He also has a funny drinking story. I guess they have this this frat at West Virginia, and they have an 8-beer bong. And it goes 2 stories up.
Oh, God.
So they dump 8 beers in, and he walked in. He goes, what's that? And the guy told him what it was. He goes, yeah, nobody's ever done it. He goes, I'll try. He drank the whole thing. The guy who gave it to him says, I've never seen anybody do that. He didn't puke or anything. It was unbelievable.
He's a machine.
Turns out, McAfee remembers the story. He says, no, I got up. I went outside, went to the back, and yacked instantly. Yeah. All of it. He says he was really obsessed with working out. His upper body was really bad. He had strong legs. So what he would do is routinely go out. He'd get hammered, absolutely sauced. He'd show up to workouts at 6 a.m. and in between reps, he'd go out and yak all day.
That was a good life in West Virginia.
I highly advise people. It's a funny. Go read it. It's a really good read. He challenged teammates to field goal competitions and offered them gum. One guy took it so personally, he kept practicing and eventually ran up to him and said, hey, give me my effing gum.
He's got a great personality. There's a reason he's bounced around to a lot of different gigs. I'm not sure if he's doing the play-by-play stuff anymore. I'm not sure if that was the best fit for him, but whenever I see clips of his show, I end up cracking up. He was really good with Barstool for a number of years, and it tells you there's not many special teams guys, there's not many kickers and punters that end up making a career as a media member in their post-playing days, and you have to have a personality. Usually if you're going to hire a former player, you're going with the quarterback or the guy that, you know, that can get into the X's and O's, the big star name. He was a relatively unknown NFL player to a certain extent, and he walked away when he was still playing for the media gig. That's how much money he probably knew he could make outside of football, and it ended up being a really good bet for him.
And one last story. It's the very first one you read about. When he was a rookie in the NFL, he had one of his better friends was DeVan of the Colts. Give me just a second here. Kyle DeVan. Yeah, they had no money. They weren't making a lot. They said they had talked about getting motorcycle safety courses, and one of the coaches had set it up. Both of them backed out. McAfee, on the day of the class, they got together at DeVan's place, and he showed up on a motorcycle. DeVan said, what the hell is this? He looked at the Titan 1600 chopper. McAfee said, well, I bought it. DeVan asked him if he knew how to ride it. McAfee explained that he was riding the motorcycle in Indy, but he hadn't figured out how to stop or start it. So every time he got to a stoplight, he'd pull into a parking lot and do circles until the light turned green.
Oh, I'm just going to go do a couple donuts over here, and then the light's green. We're good.
DeVan says, I always love that story because there's really what he's like. All gas, no brakes. That's him.
So that's a good line.
That's your read of the day. This comes from a golf tournament Tiger Woods has set up.
Yeah, he opened up a new course yesterday. It's his first public course that he's ever opened.
Yeah, Payne's Valley.
Amazing.
In Missouri. I think it's part of that whole Big Cedar Lodge complex.
Okay.
But yeah, it's his first public course.
So he opens the course. He invites a lot of the pro players. Come out, check it out. Let's get some pub for it. Rory and Justin Thomas, they're all mic'd up. So it's Rory, Justin Thomas on the green. Justin Rose is about to hit a putt. And they're talking in golf voices. They're mic'd up. And when you see these golfers together, I'm always wondering, are they talking about shot angles, what club they're using?
Right, right.
No, this is what they were talking about.
I'll tell you what, we're on this big dominoes kick at the minute. It's so good. I swear to God,
it's so good.
Like if you don't know what the really good local pizza place is, Domino's is like solid.
Yeah,
you know what you're gonna
do. Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty crappy. So you probably didn't understand. Basically, they talked about pizza. And Rory says, yeah, if you can't find a good pizza place, we've been really in on Domino's lately.
Like you guys ever heard of this Domino's place? They're pretty good, man.
I order everything on that pie. He swears by Domino's.
They've had a couple of these kind of golf events this year, obviously, because of COVID. And the early ones, it was fun just to have a sporting event to watch, but it felt like a lot of the trash talk was... They were just trying to tell, like, hey, egg it on a little bit, you know, be outlandish, say some stuff. This one was a lot of fun because they were obviously close friends. They all of them get along great, and there's a reason they were all invited to play at this thing for Tiger. You know, it was only a handful of pros, and then Jack was there. Like, you know, it was a pretty who's who of the golf world. But the conversations were really genuine. They got into stuff like this. The trash talk it wasn't awkward in any way, shape, or form. There was a moment that Rose hit a tee shot that was about 150 yards left of the fairway, just totally yanked it. And it was the funniest picture I saw on Twitter yesterday because Justin Thomas immediately leans into the angle and goes like two arms wide left and drops like, man, that's got to be like 150 yards to the left of the fairway. Like, I don't know, it was for golf fans, it was a really fun event to watch. And the pizza stuff was hilarious.
All right, so quick question, and then I'll give you the last bit of advice. We'll talk to Brandon Huffman coming up here. Domino's or Pizza Hut? If you have to go national chain, you're lazy, the local place isn't as close. I'm an advocate of local pizza, but if you're going national chain, are you Domino's or are you Pizza Hut?
Are those the only two that apply?
Is Round Table considered national chain?
No.
That's not right.
How many Round Tables do you see versus like what?
What about Papa John's? Not counting Papa in the house?
Are you going Papa John's?
No, I'm not going. I'm just
you
saying.
You got Godfather's.
Yeah, you got Little Caesars.
Really? You can put these in there.
I'm just saying there's more than just two national pizzas.
I said Little Caesars and I got destroyed for that comment.
You did.
Even though the Oregon City Little Caesars is money.
You did.
Now, if all I'm down to is that, I'm not having pizza.
Really?
Oh, that
much of a pizza
You're
snob,
that
huh?
pizza snob?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, even with the revamped garlic bread crust?
Yeah.
The revamp.
Well, they did that like 4 years ago. It was a big deal. Their crust used to suck.
I will say this, and it's not because I have a negative opinion or the other. I just haven't had it in a very long time. I would go Domino's because I can't remember the last time I've had Pizza Hut. Honestly, I can't.
I think the best of the best, Pizza Hut wins. I think on a more consistent basis, it's Domino's.
Yeah, we never get that kind of pizza. Like, Papa Murphy's to me is a national chain. Papa Murphy's is all over the place. That's our go-to pizza spot.
Yeah.
That's not like a local pizza joint. Like if I'm going to go pick up a pizza on my way home, it's always Papa Murphy's.
But see, this is what I'm saying. You're lazy. You're on the couch. You don't want to cook. Between those options.
Order a pizza. Yeah, I would probably go Domino's.
Mm. I can't believe you wouldn't eat either.
You know what? That's a lie. I've seen you.
We
used to have these big meetings, and you'd come in and take 80 slices.
If it's there... I'll grab it. But if you're saying it, if I'm at home
and you want pizza, you're too lazy.
Pizza. There's too many. There's a Round Table and a Bellagio's.
You're not playing the game
within a block.
You're not playing the game.
It's
Bellagio's does have good pizza.
Bellagio's does have good pizza.
I haven't had
so does Round Table.
Pizzicato recently. I forgot how good Pizzicato is.
There's a lot of great pizza
places.
There's
a Mod Pizza within a mile.
Yeah. Mm.
How funny is that though? I love when really rich people have stuff like that.
Domino's.
Like, he's a big Domino's fan. Like, what the hell, Rory?
Hey, you like what you like.
That's true. Very true.
And lastly, did you see this? The Colts beat the Vikings over the weekend.
That they did, Bob. Yes.
Darius Leonard, one of my favorite young defensive players, linebacker for the Colts. He's running off. Now, they have fans in their arena or their stadium.
They did in Indy. They had a few thousand there. Yeah.
He's running out and the fans are cheering him.
Uh-huh.
He sees a kid cheering for him like Darius. He takes his glove off. He tosses the kid his glove, his football glove. His wedding ring was in the glove.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Did he get it back?
Yeah, he got it back.
I heard a story the other day, golf. I know we're against it. Sorry. I heard a story the other day. I was golfing with a buddy. I won't say his name because his wife might kill him. But he was playing golf somewhere over in Bend. And he realized at the end of the round that his wedding ring had fallen out of his golf bag. And he went back to the pro shop. Like, how do you find that at a golf course, right? That could be anywhere. He didn't know where it fell out. So he like walked his path to the golf course, couldn't find it, went back to the clubhouse. They're like, yeah, man, sorry. Nobody has returned it. They got returned the next day because the morning ground screw showed up. They mowed it. And they heard like
clank,
a
clank, 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 clank.
So they called him up the next day, like, hey, your ring's in, and it had like a dent in it. I don't think he ever told the wife, but he's like, I got my ring, I'm all good, don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't lose your wedding ring.
Okay, don't lose that one. That's
you're still wearing it every day.
I still am wearing the wedding ring. Yeah, I'll make sure to not throw my golf glove at an adoring fan as I get done with a round suit.
All right, coming up next, a lot of doom and gloom around the future of the Pac-12, but are they really taking a hit in the most important department that there is? Recruiting. Brandon Huffman, 24/7, joins us next to give us his thoughts on what the conference has been doing within recruiting, being the last conference return to play. Brandon Huffman next.
Hey, welcome back in 134. Got some stuff still to get to. Quarterback in the NFL is struggling. We got Statter story coming up final hour. But a lot has been made about the Pac-12 doom and gloom. They're going to fall behind everybody else. They won't be able to recruit anymore. And we wanted to know what's going on with the conference. And joining us now, friend of the show, Brandon Huffman, national recruiting editor for 24/7 Sports. Go give him a follow on Twitter, at Brandon Huffman. Brandon, thanks as always for the time, man. I want to get to a lot with the Pac-12. I want to start, though. I see headlines about recruiting sometimes, and I think, oh, okay, but they don't really know what they mean. So I want to start with the dead period. I see a headline that says the dead period is extended until the end of 2020. First, what does that mean? And second, your reaction to the dead period being extended.
Hey, if it's any consolation, I've been covering 18 years, and there's still things that I don't even know what it means. what I do know what this means, and it's been fluid. You know, initially, the first dead period was in the month of February. And what the dead period usually means is that there's just no on-campus, in-person communication going on between a school and a recruit. And as most people that follow recruiting know, there's certain times of the year where coaches are allowed on the road. Mm-hmm. There's other times of the year where they're not allowed on the road. But typically, with the exception of the week of signing day, there is going to be a period where recruits can go visit schools. There's only during the spring from April 15th to the end of May. Coaches can be on the road. They can be on the road during the football season. But what the NCAA did in that first week when the pandemic kind of got rolling in March is they extended the dead period through indefinitely the end of or until April 15th when the evaluation period. Then they just kept moving it back. So basically, we are now almost into October, and recruits have not been permitted to be on a college campus in an unofficial or official visit role since before the shutdown. And that's knocked out a good, important 6 months of coaches getting on the road to see these recruits, or these recruits going on the road to see the school. No unofficials, no officials, no evaluation period. And now with that being extended to the end of December, it's going to be fascinating with some of these elite recruits who haven't had a chance to visit schools, how they're going to pick a school without ever having a chance to see that school. So that's what the dead period means. It means coaches can't go see you. You can't go see coaches. Everything's going to have to be digitally done.
Yeah. Brandon, I want to pick your brain on this, man. When you look at the landscape of recruiting in the country and the Pac-12, a big concern for us here, there's a lot of doom and gloom. You know, it's the Pac-12 is last to come back and play football. This is going to screw the conference for decades. They're never going to recover from this. There's a lot of that narrative out there to get these teams back on the field, and it seems like they will. What is the recruiting landscape, though? What has it looked like over the last, let's say, 2 months leading into the season for the teams that have started, and then the Pac-12 still hasn't played? What has been the impact in recruiting from what the Pac-12 has decided to do during COVID?
You know, it's not been as damaging as you would have thought, largely because every other school in the country, whether they're playing or not, is operating under the same guidelines of recruiting. They can't go out and visit school whether they're playing a game or if their season's been postponed. They can't go see a school. They can't, last week the NCAA released an announcement, a statement that, you know, coaches couldn't give tickets to a recruit to come to a game during the fall. Even if they're playing, they were not permitted to have recruits on campus at the games in an official recruiting capacity. So even if it was an unofficial visit, the kid was coming on his own dime, those schools that were still playing still couldn't bring a kid to campus. They couldn't do any pregame festivities with them. So the only thing that those schools have as an advantage is they have a game being played that these kids can watch on television. But it's kind of been, you know, just standard operating because everybody in the country is operating behind the same NCAA standards. The Pac-12 hasn't been as affected by it as you would see. Now, one of the big things about recruiting that I've seen since the beginning of time is you really get your bump in a recruiting class the year after a successful season. You're seeing that with Oregon. They're coming off the heels of a Rose Bowl win after the 2019 season, and their 21 recruiting class really have that momentum. So I think we may see more of an effect happening in 2022, but if the Pac-12 does decide to play a season, then I think it's all for naught. I think the Pac-12's biggest issue is what they've been doing on the field, and just kind of the ineptitude off the field is, you know, more to the fans' anger, but I don't think recruits are looking at it that as much. And what it's really allowing is a lot of Pac-12 coaches to spend more time recruiting because they're not having to worry about game planning and X's and O's during the week.
Yeah, Brandon Huffman, our guest, national recruiting editor, 24/7 Sports. We'll give him a follow on Twitter, at Brandon Huffman. A two-parter for you. One, on the Oregon note, you mentioned how good they're doing right now. You've been around this industry a long time. You covered it a long time. Are you surprised at them having the number three recruiting class in the country, because that's even loftier than I think even some Duck fans imagined ever having. And then the vice versa part of that, which program right now in the conference is the biggest drag on, you know, the biggest weight of not holding their weight to not having a good class so far?
Well, I would say I'm not really surprised with Oregon being up in the top, because you got to remember, I'm sure you guys understand this, but to the national perception, Oregon's been a big deal for at least the last 12 years. I mean, most of these kids grew up watching the Marcus Mariota, the DeAnthony Thomas team, the Michael James. So when they were playing youth, I mean, one of the most prominent youth football teams in the West Coast is the Inland Empire Ducks, the IU Ducks, which they got a number of Pac-12 rosters. These kids were wearing duck gear and wearing, you know, Oregon paraphernalia since they were kids. So it's not too surprising in that. So we've seen, it's like basketball. I mean, people seem surprised that Gonzaga's got the number one player of the country, but we've known Gonzaga over the last 15, 20 years to be a national player. That's how Oregon is. I think what's surprising is almost how easy Mario Cristobal is making it look. Because remember when Chip Kelly was there, they did get DeAnthony Thomas and Eric Armstead in back-to-back classes, the number one player on the West Coast. So it's not, you know, even going back to Hawaii Nada, they've been getting elite players, but it's the bulk amount of elite players that they're getting. And it's not just going and getting one kid out of Oregon. It's going to get the top three players in Arizona. It's going to get the top players in California, keeping the one in-state kid, then going in to other parts of the country and grabbing those top players. And I think that's where maybe the surprise is that it's not just a Western-focused class. It's they're going down to the Southeast. They're going down to the Southwest. They're going to the East Coast. And they're taking elite players out of the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 backyards and putting this class together. I don't think the rest of the country was really prepared for Oregon to do that.
Well, let me ask you about Washington, the big rival to Oregon. I look right now at the current rankings, and it says they're 26th in the country, which, you know, I think a lot of programs would love to be top 26 in recruiting. But for UW, they've been more accustomed to being in that like top 15 to top 20 range. What have we heard and what have we made of Jimmy Lake, kind of the new, you know, commander in chief at UW, and kind of what his philosophies are and the way he's approaching this as the head coach and not the D coordinator? What has been the difference for UW and why they're maybe 26th?
Well, I think part of it was Washington put a lot of eggs in the basket of getting guys on campus this spring to see what John Donovan's offense looked like, to, you know, see this new Washington look and to get guys in there for unofficial visits. In early January, when the first dead period lifted after the early signing period, Washington had a huge junior day with about 25-30 of the top players in the Northwest, which included three players in the top 10 of the country from the state of Washington, J.C. Tuimoloau, Emeka Egbuka, and Sam Heward. And that just kind of was a preview of what the spring was going to be like with a number of events in the Northwest where teams were going to be coming in and playing in these tournaments, being a part of these camps. They would go visit Washington. Well, then they lose that spring, and I don't know that there was necessarily a backup plan in place like there was at other schools, that when they lost the opportunity to show off their campus, they had another plan. I think Washington was really heavily banking, and who's going to be able to predict a pandemic like this? That took that opportunity, because a lot of the uncertainty with high-end recruits, specifically a player like Emeka Egbuka, who's the number one receiver in the country and lives just outside Seattle, he wanted to see what Washington's offense looked like. He wanted to see, you know, more than just in the X's and O's talks he's had with the coaches, what does this offense actually look like? And I think there's a lot of questions, like, what is Washington going to look like on the field moving forward? And really, this whole class can be salvaged. If Jimmy Lake can pull off, you know, even just one of the two between Emeka and Luke and J.P. Tuimoloau to go along with Sam Heward, it's going to be considered a victory. If he gets all three top 10 players, people will forget that they were 26 at one point. It's going to be about how they close. But if the only player he signs in those top three is Sam Heward, who's a Washington legacy, there's going to be some kind of heavy grunting or groaning that we should say leading into it, to say, how do you squander this elite talent? And you're seeing on the basketball side with him losing the top two players in the state to Kentucky and Duke, he's battling against the Oklahomas, the Ohio States, the Alabamas for Emeka and JT. You lose those, then that brings the question, are they the national power that the fan base expects them to be when they can't even recruit against them?
Yeah, last one for you, Brandon, because we're up against it, but you mentioned the dead period being extended to the end of the year. It's going to be really strange how kids commit never being able to take a visit, or at least recently take a visit. That's wild. So are there certain programs, at least in the Pac-12 landscape, that you think it helps or hurts just not having that ability to bring kids on campus towards the end of the year?
I think there's a lot of schools that it does hurt. I think, you know, schools like Colorado, I mean, when you talk about a school that just absolutely got hosed, it was Colorado. They deal with the coaching change after signing day. They get Carl Durrell on campus, and then basically he's had about a 10-day window since he got the job to have recruits on campus. And it's hard enough to recruit to Colorado when everything's in a perfect world, but it's harder, it's even that much harder when you have a new coach, a program that, you know, has had some turnover in the last couple of years on the coaching staff, and now you can't even get kids to campus. I also think Washington State really was, you know, punished for this as well. Nick Rolovich gets hired in the day, in the weeks leading up to the February signing period. He comes in mid-January, so he spends those 2-3 weeks trying to finalize that 2020 class, and they were, once again, like Washington, they were planning to really turn up the heat on kids, getting them onto campus in the spring, getting them in there for camp, and now he, too, has lost that opportunity to get these kids onto his campus. And so I think the schools of the coaching changes have been the most affected by it.
Yeah, Brandon Huffman, great stuff as always. National recruiting editor, 24/7 Sports. Go give him a follow on Twitter, at Brandon Huffman. Brandon, thanks as always for the time, man. We always appreciate it, and hopefully we'll catch up again here soon.
All right, thank you, guys.
There you go, Brandon Huffman. Good stuff. Yeah, dead period extended to the end of the year. That's a little strange. You're going to have kids. That first signing day is in December.
Well, yeah, extended, but February. It's odd that you're in a predicament where kids aren't allowed to go on campus. And oh, by the way, not as doom and gloomy in the recruiting trail as people make it out to be. It really comes down to X's and O's. And if teams are going to be able to get into the playoff and have that kind of success the way Oregon did in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, let's continue on that. I got a couple lingering thoughts from what Brandon Huffman had to say there. Also, there's one quarterback that is sticking with his guns 2 weeks into the season. Should he be? Crunch time next on the Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton, Aloha Division, Vancouver. They're all back up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com.
Did you go?
Great deals going on in the month of September.
Did you go?
I was at the Glorious House of Games this morning.
Go! Can I tell you something?
Sure, fire away.
I've been getting back into the weights.
You have, yeah, trying to pump.
I woke up ready to go.
Uh-huh.
I woke up a little later than usual, and I'm on a deadline with when the wife has to start work.
Okay, so you got to get your workout in and get home.
I have to be at home ready to watch the kids by 7 a.m.
Yeah.
I got up. I got to the gym at like 6, 10-ish. Okay. So it's a lot later than I like to be there. I like to be there for a while.
Sure.
I realized I forgot my iWatch.
Oh, no.
I turned around and left.
Really?
I'm to that point.
You're that much of an iWatch snob?
It's not about having the watch so you can see my watch. It's about tracking my exercises.
Yeah, so you wouldn't get an exercise unless you could track it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do that sometimes.
I hate to admit that, but yes.
That's okay. You know,
I'll get the workout in.
Sure.
But yeah, I look down and I go, well, now I can't track the damn thing. And I kind of felt weird without it.
Yeah.
It's so stupid because I didn't have a watch a year ago. I used to lift all the time.
Right. I get pissed because I'll get like 25 minutes into a workout and I didn't start like my workout button or whatever for it to track it. And I'm like, damn it. I'm not going to get credit for all of this.
You ever notice when you do a workout, it when you hit end, it says total calories, let's just for argument's sake, 550.
Yeah, I think I have, what was I at this morning? I was at like 6 something this morning.
Okay, so total calories, it says
658.
Total is 550.
Mm-hmm.
The active/exercise calories, when your heartbeat's going the fastest, it'll always say like 460.
Sure.
Right? So there's almost a 100-point difference there. You notice that when you hit end, it takes your active calorie count and it doesn't add your total calorie count.
Yeah, why don't I get double the points here?
Well, why doesn't it just say properly, I burned 500 calories today instead of just taking my 400 exercise calories?
This is very true.
I got some beef with the iWatch, but I'm also obviously very dependent on it because I derailed my morning workout because I wasn't wearing it.
I love that you did that. That cracks me up. I do. My trainer gives me a hard time every morning because we'll start like stretching to get ready to go. And I'm like, wait,
three, wait, two,
wait. Okay, now we can get going, all right? I got to make sure I get all those points. And I also wish I could do something on the iWatch where I could tell it to shut the hell up on Sundays.
What do you mean?
Because it constantly tells me on Sundays, like, hey, you might want to stand up. It's like, how about no?
I think you could turn that off on your activity
I know.
App.
I think I need to. I don't want an update. I don't need to be told to stand up. I'm not moving. It's a Sunday. I don't move on Sundays.
Yeah. Mine will do that once a day. It'll say, hey, usually you're a little far ahead than where you're currently at. There's still time today. And if it's a Sunday and I'm not doing jack, I look at it and I almost just chuckle. I'm like, I'm watching football. I ain't doing what you're telling me to.
That was really good stuff from Brandon Huffman. Did you see, by the way, on a recruiting angle, that Deion Sanders has already made an offer to a five-star prospect on his first day at Jackson State?
By the way, Huffman already apologized.
Who, what?
Huffman texted me, apologized.
For what?
So sorry, I got a little long-winded there.
Oh, that's how, no.
I was like, no, dude,
Brandon
you're great.
Huffman's awesome, dude. He's great. I think it's because I told him we were against it. But I think it is good to know. Like, he pointed out it might become an issue in the years to come for the Pac-12. But we've heard this, like, doom and gloom. You're never going to compete again. The conference will cease to exist. So it'll be the Power Four, not the Power Five. Well, you have, what, four programs right now in the top 25. Washington's right outside of the top 25. And they got a chance to land two of the best players in the country still that are in their area. Like, I think his point is valid that if you don't play this year and things go terribly wrong, that you might see the impact in 2022 or 2023. But at least as of right now, there's no impact.
But I think the problem is we project our feelings as grownups that get paid to cover this, you know, radio hosts, writers, you know, we all get caught up in that. We look at it from the outside and see inept leadership in Larry Scott, right? Or we see slightly poor coaching, a different program. Carl Durrell, right? You're going to hire him. Is he really going to do anything for Colorado? We'll wait and see, but not a lot of people are optimistic.
Right.
And we project that onto 16 to 18-year-old kids as if they follow and care about the same things we care about as adults. We talk about revenue sharing. We talk about TV contracts. We talk about the commissioner of a conference and the presidents of a conference. 16 and 17-year-olds don't give a rip about that. So I think when we get into this doom and gloom narrative for the Pac-12, and it's always surprising to me, the biggest quote-unquote Pac-12 football fans are always the ones that just completely crush it as many times as they possibly can. Those kids don't think about that stuff. That's not of importance to them. What is important is winning. What is important is competing and playing in big bowl games.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there is obviously a tie-in there with all of this stuff, but that's what kids care about. Mario Cristobal in Oregon won the Rose Bowl last year. Was Larry Scott still the commissioner?
He was. I saw him on the field. His son was wearing an Oregon jersey.
Did he still suck as a commissioner last year? So he didn't stop you from accomplishing that, and now look at the recruiting class, top three. I think you can be okay as a conference. You're never going to be the SEC. You're never going to be probably what Clemson is. Hopefully you are in the next 5 to 10 years. I'd love to see a team jump into that. But until that moment, you're basically on par with a lot of the Big Ten, sans Ohio State, a lot of the Big 12, a lot of the ACC. That's kind of who you are. You're in tough recruiting areas. You get those late night kicks. You just got to win. You go out and win, and you take care of getting the talent. And when you get the proper talent, everything is a game changer. USC's got number 9 recruiting class right now.
You got two classes in the top 10.
I don't have faith in Clay Helton, but hell, if you get enough good players, sometimes your coach can be mediocre and you can be okay. Yeah, so
you won a Rose Bowl with Sam Darnold, man.
I'm not ready to pronounce this conference dead yet, even though there's a lot of people that act like they love the conference that's currently dancing on top of its grave.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on. We'll continue to track it because that dead period getting extended to the end of the year is a pretty interesting note. I mean, you got to have a lot of kids that might end up signing without visiting officially. It's kind of strange. It's been closed down since February. That first signing day is in December, and maybe some kids feel comfortable enough that they're willing to sign in December. Maybe some decide that they want to wait until February because they're hoping to get the chance to go on campus. It'll just be interesting to watch and see how all of that plays out coming up in December.
On the Deion note of offering a five-star, did you also see him tweet out and say, hey, Jackson, need a gated home? 4-bedroom house. If you have a private lake, that'd be preferable. I plan on being here a while.
Ooh, he's moving on in, baby.
He's looking for real estate.
Moving on in. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton, Loa Division, Vancouver. They're all back up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Great deals going on, as always, in the month of September. I'll be back at the Glorious House of Gaines tomorrow morning. Lots to get to in the final hour. One coach wore something today that everybody's talking about. We got to talk about a quarterback who's sticking by his guns, and we wonder, should he be? Stat or story coming up. We got another game in the NBA playoffs tonight. It's going to be a loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.